The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back, and it's been a good show, and more to come. Michael Sag joining us shortly. Let's go to Shannon next in Georgia. Shannon, thank you. Welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Paul. Quick question. Just want to hear your take on this before I say anything else. How important do you think Trump's endorsement of Tuberville was in his win yesterday?
It was the single most important endorsement. Without Trump getting involved, I think it would have been extremely close. Jeff Sessions was not a good candidate, he'd been beaten down pretty badly by getting fired by Trump. But when Trump came out in favor of Tuberville, to me it was the game was over.
Yeah, so I want to throw a couple of things at you, Paul, and see if you agree with what I'm seeing, and maybe I'm wrong, and it's very possible. You know, I see the reports that Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity have had phenomenal ratings over the last quarter. I think Tucker Carlson set a cable media record. Yeah, FBI reports they did more background checks for firearm sales last month than ever in the history of background firearm. The greatest month of firearm sales in the history of our country. Trump now is, I guess, 88-2 is what I've read in his endorsements of candidates for office. And then you combine that with some of the ratings drops that I've seen and read about with ESPN as far as the woke center, and I put that in quotations, the ESPY awards, things of that nature. You think there's some misreading of the room going on by the progressives and those that are looking for dramatic change in our country right now? Are they really missing what's really happening here?
I don't know if they're missing it, except that they're doing, at least as of this moment, Shannon, the exact same thing they did in October of 2016. They disregarded the whispers and the noise, and they just simply tried to engineer an election for Hillary Clinton. And I rarely say things like that, but I'm telling you, it's true. This is a little different, but I don't really think what's happening now is as important as the political experts. I've heard countless people say that you can't recover from where we are right now. I disagree. I think people are not focused on the election right now. People are focused on the economy and focused on, you know, being healthy and being employed. I don't think most people in America are watching Joe Scarborough or Tucker Carlson or any of these other people debate Donald Trump's failures or successes.
So let me ask this question. Do you feel like there's a growing, I don't know, for me personally, I try to watch SportsCenter, I try to watch the morning programming on ESPN, try to listen to somebody. I have a hard time doing it now, Paul, and it's because things have shifted so far left in so many areas. I really feel like there's a lot of us out here that are feeling really isolated and ostracized from the mainstream pursuits that we used to enjoy. Pro football, pro basketball, pro baseball.
Listen, I shouldn't be saying all this, but I'm going to be here and give my opinion. If somebody doesn't like it, they can replace me. That's how I've always felt. But I understand. I know what you're talking about. I'm a participant in some of these things, as you know. And there's some moments when I'm shaking my head, but what's happening right now is, you have two things converging. This is my opinion. You have the COVID conversation, and then you have the social injustice conversation, and a lot of people are just simply overreacting to all of it. And I know we've been accused of it too, which is fair. I don't mind. My interest on this program is to try and get as much information and talk to the people that matter and listen to folks who have conversations. I don't have an agenda on this show. I know people think I do, but if you're listening to a conversation here that doesn't necessarily marry the so-called agenda that people are trying to label me and many other people. I know where I work, but I'm only responsible for this show.
Yes, sir. I just know that there's been, you know, a lot of a leftward movement in media with Disney-owned corporations, ESPN being one of them. I think there's a lot of folks with a growing feeling of disenchantment you know, and I'm wondering if what we're seeing is not almost the same as in the 2016 election, where for 8 years Obama was in office and there was a swing hard the other way. And I think the left is trying to push so hard to the left that there's a real boomerang
effect. Yeah, I agree. I have never, Shannon, I'm fascinated by politics, but I've never seen the media so invested in something. It's not even, I remember, I think it was George W. Bush's second term. I mean, there was a fatigue in the country. But it wasn't reckless. This is reckless on both sides, but it just so happens that the left has more networks out there than the right.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, and the thing that's really scary is when you start reading about and hearing about movements now that folks are trying to make sure that we educate protesters on what it exactly is that they are protesting against or tearing down in terms of statute, that we need to make sure people know what they're fighting against, so they understand that if you're tearing down a statue of Frederick Douglass, for example, you're really going against your own mantra there. So it just seems like there's some folks out there that are just mad to be mad. And it seems like it's taking a lot of folks that are maybe middle-of-the-road guys like myself, or a little bit more right-leaning like myself, and just pushing this almost extreme right and feeling really upset with the way things are.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm really looking forward to November 4th because that means there are four more years that we don't have to deal with this. But the election of President Trump is one of those moments in history that some people, you could not have predicted it. I mean, you really couldn't have. And I think as a result, people are literally off the rails. They've never calmed down as a result.
Well, my prediction is this, Paul, and I may be 1,000% wrong, but I really think COVID will start to fade away shortly after November the 4th. And I think the return to normalcy will be November, December, and I think by the first of the year, regardless.
Well, whether I completely agree with you or not, I hope you're right.
Oh, gosh, I hope I do, too, because if I have one more bad news article that I have to look at or read or hear, I may just, I don't know, go jump off a bridge or something. I appreciate
it. I'm officially sick of it myself, but I know that doesn't mean anything. Hey, thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. James is up next. Hey, James.
Paul. How are you today, man?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Here's what I'm thinking, and people that know me know I try not to think because it hurts my head. But I think possibly you should take a recording of Shannon and take it into your big bosses.
Okay.
There's a lot more of individuals that can express themselves a more succinctly and to the point than I can. Shannon's one of them. They need to hear what that man has to say. Now, here's why I call. Did you ever think when Tommy Tuberville was coaching at Mississippi or Auburn that you would ever have the potential of calling him Senator Tuberville?
No. those of us who knew Tommy well, and obviously I would put myself in that group, we would always joke about his political skills because he was quite good. But that's when I think he first floated the idea a couple of years ago about running for governor. It made sense. Quite frankly, governor made more sense than Senate because, I can see Tuberville rolling into the Aniana cafe and bellying up to the counter with everybody else. But Kay Ivey decided to run for re-election. He chose not to. It looked like he was done, and then he got an opening. He will fit in Washington. Tommy can kibitz with the best of them. We'll take a break. Dr. Michael Sag, leading epidemiologist, will join us and try to give us some insight on what the fall looks like. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back. Great to have you on. And certainly with all the conversations this week from Commissioner Sankey on Monday to just the random conversations with fans, everyone trying to get a handle on where we are. And of course, this being a sports show, will we see college football here in a couple weeks? Dr. Michael Sag has more important duties than that as one of the leading infectious disease specialists in the country at UAB in Birmingham. Dr. Sag, great to have you back. It's always a pleasure. And I always like to start off with, where are we right now? It's been a couple of weeks since we've talked, and the numbers don't seem to be going very well.
No, I think this is the scenario we were hoping not to see when we spoke last time, and that is that we're seeing spikes in cases in a lot of the Southeast and in California, and New York seems to be managing okay, but the rest of us are kind of going through a big surge now, and the big question that we're all dealing with is, what does that mean for college football that we all love and we want to see come back? And the answer right now is a shrug of the shoulders and saying, I don't know, and it depends. But we're not in a good place right now, Paul.
Dr. Sag, in talking to various conference commissioners, as well as the conversation we had with Greg Sankey the other night at the SEC, they're all leaning on people like you. You know, they're not specific in what they're looking at and what they're hoping to ascertain here in the next couple of weeks. You're on the other side of that. You're helping advise. What are the key elements here before they can make a decision?
I think there's several things. The facts that everybody listening knows is that this virus is very contagious. And we also all know that while it may not cause a lot of disease in very young people, as we get people into their 20s, 30s, and 40s, the disease starts to pick up in terms of severity and mortality. Even though the numbers are low overall, there are some people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s who are dying from this. And so that's what makes the seriousness of it so strong. So then we put that together and we think, okay, what's the nature of football? And it's people in each other's face. And so the likelihood of transmission on a football field is very high between the players. So the thing we've been talking about a lot is screening and doing testing, and a lot of the schools have already started that, as we talked about last time. And what I'm hearing anecdotally, not mentioning a specific program or school, is that the testing rates are going up among the college athletes, the football players in particular. And so you could paint one scenario and say, wow, if by the time September rolls around, most all the players on the team have had it, maybe we're out of the woods. And so you could think about it that way, but still the coaches are there and they have a chance of getting sick. And also this ugly, ugly thought of, maybe the immunity isn't lifelong. Maybe it only lasts for 3 to 4 months. And if that's the case, it's a whole new ball game. And I don't mean football. I mean with all of us just dealing with the epidemic. So that's kind of what's new since we talked last, and that's a mouthful.
And you hear numbers, you hear stories, we all do, and some of them are pretty ugly, as I'm sure you'd rather not discuss. But I've asked you this a couple of times, but you know, there just seems to be such a misconception or misperception of herd immunity, as if we all get it, we're good. I've asked you this too many times, but for those who haven't heard you, can you explain the immunity issue right now, and what do we know about it?
Sure. And I think it's a great question, because it may be at play, but the notion is that with most infectious diseases, the ability of the virus to infect people depends on the number of susceptible folks. So if, let's say, 70% of a population has had the infection and has developed immunity to it, then you can start looking for the transmission rates to drop, simply because there's not enough firewood, right? There's not enough ways to keep the fuel to keep the thing going. And so there are two problems with that. The first is that we're only at most 4% of our population. So we got a long way to go before we get to 70%. And unfortunately, with this virus, we can quibble about what the quote mortality rate is. But even if it's at, let's just say, 0.5% overall, if we're talking about, you know, 250 million people getting this, that's an awful lot of deaths. I mean, not illness, deaths. So that's one problem. The second problem is that along the way, you can look at Dallas, Houston, Phoenix, Miami. Right now, just with the cases that we have, with maybe just 4% of our country having experienced this, the hospital systems are overwhelmed. And this is just the beginning of this latest surge. So when we start talking and thinking about herd immunity in college football, you know, the notion that our healthcare system is going to be swamped is a scary, scary proposition, certainly to me, but I would think to everybody. And I'm sorry, I just thought of a third thing. Sorry. But this is that last thing that I just mentioned. If it's possible that someone, even after having the infection, can have immunity for, say, 3 to 6 months, and then it wanes, well, now they're right back into the population of susceptible people, and herd immunity becomes almost impossible under that setting.
We're chatting with Dr. Michael Seg, who had this virus back in March. Dr. Seg, I know that you're in an advisory position to many different people, and I don't want to draw you too deeply into an either or, but Commissioner Sankey told us Monday night that they really don't have a lot of time. He said the asset of time is narrowing very, 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 very dangerously here, and they are looking at public health. They're looking at testing. They're looking at all the issues that you've already alluded to, and some determination needs to be made. You're on a college campus right now. You know the timetable. Is anything likely to change in the next 2 to 3 weeks that would help them determine whether they can make a go of this?
I think the hope would be, as we see across the country, the actual infection rates start to diminish and reverse so that we start seeing declining numbers of new infections a day. That would give us some hope and some help in making a decision. I think we also are going to be, at least in Alabama, we're going to be screening all college students coming onto campus, and that'll be some information that the colleges and universities in Alabama can use to determine the degree of penetration of the virus into that population. So that number will help us. But I literally get a little breathless thinking about what it's going to take to assure us that it's going to be relatively safe from a public health perspective, first to put players on the field, and I think the testing can help with that, and I'm real hopeful as a college football fan that happens. But putting fans in the stands, I at this point think that's highly unlikely, simply because of the way this is transmitted and the degree of people who are infected currently. So I think most of us would settle for that right now, right? If we had a game that was played, the coaches were safe, the players were safe, and we could televise it, hell, yeah, I'd take that. I want to see the Alabama-Georgia game as much as anybody. I hope it happens.
In terms of that game is September 19th, so it's not hard to do the math. Commissioner Sankey said they need to make some determination in the next few weeks. Could you, as someone who knows so much about this, give them a green light right now based on what you know and what you're seeing, especially in the southern part of the country?
I'm going to hedge and say I'll give them a yellow light. it's hard to give them a green light because I can't say that the public health is going to be served at this moment in time. They're just, as you alluded to, too many unknowns. But you've also nailed it completely in terms of saying the clock is ticking and that time is not our friend right now. I really am so hopeful that we can play games. I'm so hopeful. I'd hate to see us have to scrub the season. Maybe we could buy some time and postpone games to later in the year, maybe. The only thing that gets in the way of that I'm worried about is that we start going into fall and winter, and then influenza comes onto the scene and cramps our hospitals even more. I will say this. Right now, people listening can say, this is horrible, potentially. What can I do? Well, I think we can all do this together. If we all do the things we know that stop the transmission, and that's staying out of crowds, it's wearing masks when we're out, and really doing our best to avoid any situation where we're around people who aren't wearing masks. If we can do that, maybe we can start to bring this under control. Nobody wants to go back into shelter at home or lockdown. So I think if we all started working on that now, maybe we can do enough collectively as a population to get this under control to where Sankey and others feel comfortable cautiously moving forward.
Dr. Sag, I've heard you talk about this in national interviews of the politicization of this virus, and we just had a caller that was on a few minutes ago that said on November 4th, this is all going to go away. And you know what that means. The presidential election is over. All the politics will go out the window. Could you address the, and this is not the first time, I mean, you were a pioneer in AIDS research. You've been dealing with the federal government and politics and criticism your entire career. But could you address the intersection of politics and this virus?
Yeah, I think it's really unfortunate for all of us because politics and public health, politics and medicine really don't go well together. And so I can try to understand what the caller was referring to, but in the world I live, the whole thing about science, the whole thing about medicine is really grounded in truth and in fact. Those are immutable. In other words, if you go to the doctor, the doctor is going to do their best to try to diagnose accurately what's wrong and will use tests and all available evidence to make a determination about what's going on and then come up with a remedy, a treatment. That's how we work. We don't think in terms of imaginary facts or false facts or anything like that. So the world I live in is all based in as much as possible into the reality of what we're seeing. And to be very honest, it's a little frustrating sometimes to be saying, well, you've got a political axe to grind here. I really, really don't. I'm trying just to call the balls and strikes as I see them as this epidemic comes around. I do my best. I'm making an honest effort. And I think every public health official in the United States and the world, for that matter, are doing exactly the same thing. And it's a little frustrating at times to be accused of having some other agenda. I honestly do not. And what we need to do, as I said earlier, is pull together and try to defeat this virus, keep it at bay, mitigate it, so that not only can we have college football, but I think even more importantly, we can have fewer people dying and save lives.
We'll leave it there, Dr. Sag. It's always great to have you on. It's just so interesting to hear somebody who understands it versus all of us, and I include myself, who think we do. Be well, and we really hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Dr. Michael Sag at UAB, one of the leading epidemiologists in this country. We'll take a break. More phone calls and your reaction to all of this when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Really great to have you here. And Ralph is up next in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Ralph.
Hey, Paul. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm concerned, and my concerns are some of the viewers, some of the people who called in earlier. It's a false equivalency to now compare ESPN viewership to another network. I'm not watching ESPN because they don't have any football on. They don't have any live baseball. And to say that as the reason that the state of the country is not quite fair. When you have health professionals on and we're not listening to the science, we're not concerned about football. We're concerned about the safety of our kids. It's a whole different issue. And then to be put into a category of people when it's a health concern, anything that you can label, you can control. I'm not a label, but I am a parent that's concerned about the safety of my kids. And I think we've allowed this thing to be politicized when it's a health issue that we should be dealing with.
Yeah, and I hope you heard Dr. Sag. I mean, you could tell he was biting his tongue, but he was trying to send the same message. And yeah, I don't know where it went wrong. I mean, I don't mind the political conversation on most things, but I think in this case, the concern is that there are people that are paying attention to things that could get them killed.
Absolutely. And out here in Montgomery, the issue that's dominating the news is every day we're breaking a record. Breaking a COVID record. And the teachers in the school systems are having to make a determination on the school. We are not talking about football.
And Ralph, you can help me with this. I saw today the governor of Alabama came out on July 15th and announced that there was going to be a statewide mask mandate. And the lieutenant governor, whose name escapes me, immediately came out. She's the governor. But the number two person immediately came out and said that's ridiculous.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. I'm going to say it like this. I'm a 62-year-old male with a person that had a child late in life. I have a child in high school. But I had to go out and get some medicine. But I had to make a stop at the hardware store. It was one demographic that didn't have on masks. One demographic who politicized our health condition. I'm fighting cancer. And I don't know how that happened, and then to be put in a label to be called on the extreme or liberal or left or whatever. No, we're dealing with a health condition. Now, that's impacting all the other areas of our lives, which is college football. But what about the parents who don't want to send their kids back on campus? It's bigger than just football. And it's frustrating to hear that conversation when we can't get to the human part of what we're dealing with. This is, none of us have been through this before. And we have the health professionals on who is telling us exactly that. No hard answers right now.
I think that's something that people, and I understand all the debates because Ralph, I've heard them 1,000 times, but there are people like you and many others, including people very close and dear to me, who have conditions that you don't need to get sick as a result. So yes, you're going to be a little more concerned if you've battled some underlying condition, whether it's in your case cancer or breast cancer or any other type of disease. I've been moderately healthy, but yeah, I'm concerned because there are people near me that may be more vulnerable than me, just like you are.
And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to go long because I live and die Alabama football.
Sure.
I live, and nobody wants to see us play any more than me. But I'm willing to, in my 62 years and in my years of following Alabama, I can eat this year if it comes down to it. You know, it'll be the year with the asterisk. You know, and
there will be another Alabama football season. The question is, will some of the fans be around to see it?
Absolutely. Well,
hey, you take care of yourself.
Thanks, Paul, for taking my call.
Ralph, it was a pleasure. You got it. Great to hear from you. We go from Ralph to Jim in Tuscaloosa.
I'm going to try to get through this call, and I know you're going to interrupt me, but hopefully you can let me talk like you've done everybody else and give my sapient opinion, in my opinion, on what I'm going to say. I think that all the doctors, I've not seen one doctor that's not, in my mind, irresponsible, ignorantly wrong, and irresponsible, and who's not intimidated by the crowd, the football, all the crowd, and mostly 99% of all you, and you're one of them, that want football so bad in a selfish way that you would sacrifice lives to get it. And that's the point. He should come on here and say, knowing what he said, I mean, all these things going up every day, like I emailed you last night about Alabama, the massive increase. The guy just talked about the massive increase all over the country. Cases just rising everywhere. And any doctor, any health official that does not come in, I'll come out right now and fervently say, it's completely insane and irresponsible to anybody, for any doctor not to tell the truth, in that it's ridiculous and insane to have any kind of organized football season or anything else under the circumstances that we're under right now with this illness or this virus. And I firmly mean that. I think he's completely intimidated. That's what's wrong with him, Paul. It's the same, and you know it's true. You know I'm on the truth because I usually get on the truth. It's like politicians. They're scared to tell the truth. The left is scared. A lot of left, I'm sure, want to say something positive about Trump. They're scared. They're intimidated. The whole country is intimidated to tell the truth, and they need to. But especially an official such as a doctor, health official, if that's irresponsible, they ought to have their medical license taken away. And that's a fact. I guarantee you that's a fact.
Well, I think sometimes, Jim, and I can only answer for myself, but I think Dr.
Well,
Sachs.
Answer this, Paul. Is it merit to what I just said? In your honest opinion, is it merit?
Yeah,
to what
said? I think you know me pretty well. That's why I pull out the remaining hairs in my head when we have a guest on here who equivocates. I want somebody's best judgment.
SAG a while ago just started going. He reminded me of like somebody doing a cross. I mean a regular.
Well, Jim, the problem is it doesn't matter whether Michael Sag or anybody is a college football fan. I want to know whether we should have football or not. That's it.
But they're not going to tell you the truth. That's up to now. We've seen it's clear, Paul, that with all this with the way things are now, everybody.
Jim, do you know why some people are concerned about telling the truth?
Because they're afraid of the money they're going to be blamed for losing. It's just like I told you, they're going to be criticized. They're afraid, Paul. There's no doubt about it. They are afraid.
Well, I don't know. I can guarantee it. Dr. Stagda is not concerned about the money. I think what he's trying to be fair. He lives in Birmingham. He knows. It wasn't until today that the governor of that state determined that you should wear a mask.
Paul,
I mean, he's been talking about masks for 4 months.
It's a people-pleasing situation is what it is. Every doctor, you're trying to please...
Me?
Well, I'm talking about trying to please the crowd, and the crowd is overwhelmingly wanting football.
Jim, hold on a second. Hold on 1 second, okay?
Well, let me finish one damn point here.
Well, let me know when you finish, okay?
It's a small and selfish group of people we have all over the nation regarding this situation. That's a fact. That's a fact. If it wasn't, most people would say it's outrageous to consider a kid getting a football player getting the illness and bringing it home to granddaddy and grandmother and everybody and people next to it. And it's insane to think that's not going to happen. It's insane, Paul. Yeah, I'm passionate about it because I know it's true.
Hey, Jim, may I say one thing to you before you
finish? Go ahead, Paul. Yeah, go ahead. It's your show.
if I were trying to please the fans, don't you think I would do what every other sports show does, and that's ignore this subject? That's all we've talked about since March 12th.
Hell no, because you know you've got an audience. You got an audience that's smart enough to if you do anything like that, they would get all over you about that. They'd say,
well, that's what most sports shows have done, and you know it.
Well, that's not the point with you.
I mean, we could sit here and break down the season, or we could talk about the reality of the situation.
The whole thing is this, Paul. You have broached the subject in a serious manner from day one, and that's why you couldn't do that. And that's what you wanted to do, but when you do that, you're open to criticism beyond belief if you don't do it truthfully.
Okay, well, I feel like we are. I have to run. We're up against a break. I feel like we are doing it truthfully here. We could choose to do it untruthfully. We will be back. Much more to come after this.
You are listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back. Logan is up next as we try to squeeze a few more calls in here before the next guest. Logan in North Carolina. Hello, Logan.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
We're doing great.
Awesome. Yeah, great show. I just wanted to say again, I've said this many times, but I just want to thank you for having your show. I mean, it does a great service to this country. I know that sounds crazy, but just having the different people on, different opinions, the SAG interview was great. And I hope people will wake up and realize, I know Alabama today finally got a face mask mandate, which is a huge thing. That, you know, that was great. And even Jim, I think his heart might be in the right place. I just can't follow his logic because he's all over the place. But you know, I think he's looking for the truth too. One thing I wanted to ask you about, I don't know. Somebody had mentioned earlier about ESPN and the ratings and everything. I don't know how your ratings are doing, but I can tell you this: there's a lot more people listening to you now that didn't listen before. That didn't want to hear people calling in and screaming, and they're listening to you now for your guest, for your personal ideas, and you know, just in general, the callers that call in now. We have a really good dialogue in this country on your show, and I don't think we get that a lot. I did want to ask you one thing. I know this is kind of it happened a few weeks ago, but I just wanted to ask, and you might have already answered this, I might have missed it, but how do you feel about this whole Deshaun Jackson thing and the way that I feel like, I mean, you obviously know I'm a left-leaner, you know, some people call me a Marxist, but I mean, that's not the case, but I thought that the coverage of what he said was a little bit swept under the rug compared to like somebody like Drew Brees, where everybody went crazy. I thought that kind of gave him a pass. And, you know, I'm the kind of person that if you're making racist comments, you need to be held accountable. I don't care who you are. And what he said, you know, about, you know, Jewish people, that was ridiculous. And, I mean, he couldn't even get the quote right. I mean, he was trying to quote Hitler, but didn't even quote him correctly. And I know, you know, your background, I just wonder what you thought about that. And how do you think about how the media covered that compared to like something
yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I have to tell you, and this may sound like a crazy answer, I didn't pay much attention to it. I know people are going to say, well, how could you not? Because I really don't, I don't do a national sports show every morning like some of my friends. And you know, what athletes say, by and large, doesn't faze me. And I know that may sound like a broad brush, but I really did. Just didn't pay much attention to it. He clearly didn't know what he was talking about, and he tried to clean it up. And yeah, the Drew Brees thing was overdone too, but it was just the fact that it was Drew Brees, and so many of his own teammates came after him. Hey, thanks for the call. Really do appreciate it. We are heading to a break. The commissioner of the MAC will join us in a few minutes. Stick around.